This is the International Tribunal of Crimes of Church and State on June 16, 2019, with the proclamation, a time to prosecute and to punish genocide in Canada and to raise up a new nation. On June 3, 2019, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau publicly admitted that genocide has been committed by the Canadian state within its own borders. His statement came as a shock only to those who are uninformed or forgetful. For as early as June 14, 1998, human rights investigations proved that genocide has not only been intentionally planned, committed, and concealed by church and state in Canada since the year 1891, but as a consequence, Canada and the Roman Catholic, Anglican, and United Church of Canada are guilty of this ongoing crime and must be prosecuted under international law. 21 years later, that guilt and consequence remains. And yet nothing has been done to bring those responsible to justice, for the basic reason that the guilty institutions are still the ones in charge. And yet officially, under international law, as a self-admitted and proven genocidal regime, Canada must now be prosecuted and punished under the United Nations Convention on Genocide, to which it is a signatory. My name is Kevin Annett, and since the spring of 1996, I have spearheaded the grassroots movement of Native and non-Native people that's exposed and attempted to prosecute genocide in Canada. I'm the author of 16 books and a major documentary film on the subject. I've been twice nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize, and in 2016 I was a recipient of the Prague Peace Award. In June of 1998 in Vancouver, our efforts convened the first formal inquiry into Indian residential school crimes, sponsored by the United Nations NGO known as IRAM. That inquiry revealed for the first time the disappearance of Aboriginal women and their families and the organized trafficking of Aboriginal children across British Columbia. As a result, our inquiry forced the fact of genocide in Canada onto the international stage for the first time. The Canadian government responded to our success by silencing the truth and its eyewitnesses with a so-called Aboriginal Healing Fund that used hush money and coercion to derail the first lawsuits brought against it and its partner churches. Nevertheless, in the spring of 2000, I helped launch the first permanent inquiry into these crimes, known as the Truth Commission into Genocide in Canada, a completely citizen-led grassroots movement. For the next 8 years, we led protests, church occupations, and media events across Canada that kept the fact of genocide alive when everyone, Native or white, wanted to ignore it. Eventually, in the summer of 2008, we forced the Harper government to issue a so-called apology for residential school crimes and to form the misnamed Truth and Reconciliation Commission, or TRC, a government whitewash that actively concealed the extent and true nature of the Canadian genocide. And ever since the launching of the TRC in the summer of 2008, my name and our movement has been censored and blacked out of the media and the memory of Canadians, partly owing to a covert black ops campaign led against me and our movement by Inspector Peter Montague of the RCMP E Division and his accomplices. In the process of this shutdown, seven of our movement's leading Aboriginal activists died of foul play on the streets of Vancouver. But why this blackout of the very movement that has forced the truth of genocide to light? Simply because our independent, meticulous, and incontrovertible documenting and publicizing of Canada's guilt and liability for genocide contradicts the official spin operation that was set in motion in 2008 by the government and the churches responsible for the crime. Parties who set up and ran the TRC, an enormous misinformation campaign that extends to the present day. That official spin has done its job well over the past decade. In 2010, we released a list of 28 mass graves of residential school children to the police, the government, and the media. It was ignored. In 2011, working with Mohawk elders in Brantford, Ontario, we uncovered and positively identified the bones of small children in one of those mass graves at the local Anglican Mohawk residential school. That was ignored. In 2013, our efforts helped force the resignation of Pope Benedict in Rome for complicity in these crimes. That was ignored. In 2017, we issued a public report to the United Nations on the continuity of genocide in Canada that connected the disappearance of Aboriginal women today to the same forces that wiped out 60,000 Indian residential school children over the previous century. And that, too, was ignored. In fact, all of our evidence of mass murder, enormous death rates, sterilization programs, ongoing child trafficking, and other undeniable crimes against humanity have been systematically ignored and marginalized by the corporate media and official Canadian society. And yet now, the Prime Minister is finally agreeing with us that, to quote him, it was genocide. He makes that statement like a serial killer who acknowledges a crime he has committed without fear of a consequence. And so yet another official investigation into this crime in our country is now being proposed by the Organization of American States, with a convenient nod of approval from Ottawa. But the time for controlled and dead-end inquiries is over. We have the evidence and an official admission of guilt. We know who is responsible for these ongoing crimes, not just over the past 30 years, as Mr. Trudeau is claiming, but since the very inception of Canada. So according to the requirements of international law, it is time now to prosecute and to punish this proven genocide in Canada. The punishment for intentional genocide is clear. Jail sentences for the individuals responsible, economic and political sanctions against their sponsoring governments or organizations, and the disestablishment of those organizations responsible for the crime and the appropriating of their assets that they acquired from the crime. In Canada's case, that means the following steps, according to not only the UN Convention on Genocide, but the Convention on Transnational Criminal Organizations. First of all, Governor General Julie Payette, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, and the head officers of the British Crown, the Vatican, the Canadian government, and the Roman Catholic, Anglican, and United Churches of Canada must be immediately subpoenaed and arraigned before a court of competent jurisdiction and put on trial for crimes against humanity. Secondly, the funds and properties of this government and these churches that are derived from genocide must be seized as criminal assets and held in escrow pending the decision of the genocide trial. Third, the government and these churches, as indicted criminal bodies, have forfeited and lost their legal right to operate, as well as all of their privileges such as tax exemptions, the right to tax, and to maintain their properties and normal operations. And finally, other nations, especially those parties to these two UN conventions, are obligated now to prosecute and punish Canada and its churches in this manner, including by commencing economic and political sanctions against them, seeking their expulsion from United Nations bodies, dispatching international peacekeepers to protect the victims of these institutions, and assisting the court's prosecution of these indicted institutions. Such a process is already underway. On June 7th, 21 individuals, including the Governor General and Prime Minister, received a public indictment and summons to appear before a tribunal in Vancouver scheduled on Monday, September 16th. There they are to answer charges of perpetrating, concealing, and aiding genocide in Canada. Their failure to appear can result in their immediate conviction and arrest. Well, all of this is fine in theory, but in practice, the Genocide Convention has only been enforced twice in its 70-year history, and never against a major world power. Prime Minister Trudeau's blithe admission of genocide was no doubt given with the assurance that prosecution would not accompany it. So the ultimate question remains, who will prosecute and stop a genocidal nation and its institutions when the crime continues and the perpetrators are still in charge? Let me answer that by reminding us that the self-admitted crime of genocide in Canada imposes an obligation to act on three separate groups. First, on the United Nations member state signatories to these conventions. Second, on the Canadian government and its churches and their chief officers as the guilty parties. And finally, on the people of Canada themselves. The obligations of other states and the guilty parties is clear. Canada and its churches must be punished and prosecuted by the international community. And if they're not, the entire system of international law in the United Nations is exposed as a fraud. But what are Canadians themselves obligated to do in the face of this enormous crime? The truth is that any national regime of genocide is always a group crime, implicating all of its citizens by association. For over a century, Canadians have paid for the crime with their taxes and their church offerings and tithings. By their participation in these genocidal institutions, and by their failure to act when the truth of these crimes became publicly known as early as the summer of 1998. Under the law, this makes all Canadians co-conspirators in a crime against humanity. The truth is that if Canadians continue to display such overt complicity with genocide in their own land, then they too must bear the consequences of the judgment of not only upcoming war crimes tribunals, but of international law itself. The only alternative to such criminal complicity is for all Canadians to now actively disassociate themselves from their own massive historic group crime and establish a new association that is free of these crimes and the institutions responsible. In other words, they must be part of the establishment of a new nation. To actively disassociate from their complicity in genocide, Canadians must immediately cease paying taxes and other duties to the federal government, and must not participate in its upcoming election on October 21st. They must also withdraw any oath of allegiance they have made to the British Crown or its monarch. These steps are required under international law, specifically under the International Criminal Court Convention of 1998, Article 25, Paragraph 3D, concerning contribution to a group crime. And this article states, quote, "In accordance with the statute, a person shall be criminally responsible and liable for punishment for a crime within the jurisdiction of the court if that person in any other way contributes to the commission or attempted commission of such a crime by a group of persons acting with a common purpose. Such contribution shall be intentional and shall either be made with the aim of furthering the criminal activity or criminal purpose, or be made in the knowledge of the intention of the group to commit the crime," unquote. In short, ignorance of a crime is no defense. In addition, the United Nations Nuremberg Tribunal legal principles of 1950 state clearly that complicity in the commission of a crime against peace, a war crime, or a crime against humanity is a crime under international law. In other words, any association by Canadians with the Government of Canada, with its legitimating Crown authority, or its co-conspirators, the Catholic, Anglican, and United Churches, that now constitutes complicity with crimes against humanity. That means Canadians cannot pay federal taxes, they cannot take or maintain oaths of allegiance to the Crown or its monarch, and they cannot vote in federal elections, since doing so will aid and abet sworn agents of the Crown, the senators and elected members of Parliament. Such active disassociation, however, is just the first step. The corollary obligation on every Canadian is to establish and become part of a new political association in order to abide by the rule of law, under a jurisdiction not associated with the genocidal regime called the Dominion of Canada. The framework of this new political association was established under common law on January 15, 2015, in Winnipeg, Canada, at the first constitutional convention of the Federated Republic of Canada. This republic has established a separate jurisdiction and citizenship apart from so-called Crown authority and law in Canada, a parallel system of nationhood and eventual government. By pledging themselves as citizens of this republic, Canadians not only declare their independence from a genocidal regime, but lay the basis for a new society founded on the inalienable principles of self-governance, liberty, and equality. Nearly 60% of Canadians already favor the establishment of such a republic in their country, according to a national opinion survey done in 2014. Now, under the authority of this republic, its majority mandate, and according to their own natural rights, our people in Canada can and must now publicly disengage from the genocidal regime called Canada, and they can begin by taking the public pledge of independence, which is being established by the Republic. All of us can then invoke international law and the sovereignty of a new nation by refusing to pay taxes to Ottawa, by boycotting a rigged election system that owes its allegiance to a criminal foreign monarch, and by reclaiming our nation from a proven criminal regime and the bloated corporate interests that it serves. According to the law, morality, and the cries of countless murdered men, women, and children, we indeed have no alternative. The public trial of the heads of Canada's genocidal conspiracy begins on September 16th in Vancouver. It will be accompanied by a series of public teach-ins, protests, occupations, and seizures of the assets and properties of these criminal institutions by common law sheriffs acting under the authority of the Republic. This movement to liberate ourselves from the mental and material shackles of complicity in genocide begins today with each one of us and each one of you listening. In closing, let me address this same appeal and a public stand-down order to all of the sworn servants and agents of the Dominion of Canada, to the police, the RCMP, the politicians, the judges, the civil servants, and the military, who presently protect and maintain the criminal conspiracy called Canada and the British Crown. By your actions, each of you are engaged in a crime under international law and can be indicted as co-conspirators to genocide. You are therefore required to immediately stand down from your oath of office to the Queen of England and the laws of Canada, and to take the new oath to the people and to their new incipient constitutional republic. We call upon all of you today to affirm this oath of independence with the rest of us and stand on the right side of history, justice, and the law. Let us all now begin to reclaim our hearts, our minds, and our nation. To contact the Provisional Republic of Canada and its political arm, the Republican Party of Canada, and to receive a copy of its book, Establishing Liberty, The Case for Canada, write to republicofcanada@gmail.com. That's K-A-N-A-T-A, republicofcanada@gmail.com. And from this address, you can receive a copy of the Oath and Pledge of Independence and swear allegiance to the new republic. See also ITCCS updates under murderbydecree.com for regular news and reports of this movement. And tune in to The Voice of the Republic, the program Here We Stand, every Sunday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time at bbsradio.com/Here We Stand, co-sponsored by the Republic of Canada and the International Tribunal of Crimes of Church and State, ITCCS. I, Kevin Annett, and 228 other signatories stand by this proclamation. I can be contacted at thecommonland@gmail.com. For the Republic, for Liberty, carry it on.